The epistle lesson this morning, which is from Paul's letter to the Corinthians, chapter 13, his famous chapter on love. Hear Paul's words, and I show you a more excellent way. If I speak in human or angelic tongues, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. Love does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of the wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease, and where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it too will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, whatever is part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. But when I became adult, I put away childish things. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror, but then we shall see as face to face. Now we know in part, then we shall know fully, even as we are fully known. And now these three will always remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. May the Lord bless his word to our hearts and minds today. Our gospel lesson is found in John, the 15th chapter, verses 7 through 17. These are the words of Jesus. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because servants do not know their master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything I have learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give to you. This is my command: love one another. May the Lord bless his word to our hearts and minds. Today, we've been doing a series on salt and light, how we are salt and light in the world, and today we're looking at love, and I've entitled it, Whose Team Are You On? And I suppose that love and the Super Bowl, there's sort of some tension there, but before we dive into that, let's get started with something a little humorous. There was a guy by the name of Bob, and he won a free ticket to the Super Bowl from his company. He was so excited about that, and when he got to the Super Bowl, why, he found to his disappointment that the seat was way up in the top level, and he felt like he was closer to the Goodyear blimp than he was to the field. And he was disappointed by that, and as he watched through the first quarter, felt so far away, and he looked down with his binoculars, and he happened to look at the 50-yard line, and about 10 seats back, there was an empty seat. And he kept watching through the first quarter, and he thought, well, why don't I give that a try? And so he... seat was still empty. He made his way down, made his way around the security guards, and made his way over to that seat and asked the gentleman next to that empty seat if that seat was taken. The gentleman said no, and he was all excited, so he sat down in the seat, and he turned to this guy and said, this is incredible. Who in their right mind would have a seat like this and not come to the Super Bowl? And the man said, well, actually, it belongs to me, and it was supposed to be for my wife, and she's passed away. He said, this is the first Super Bowl that we haven't been together since 1967, when we were married. Bob said, turned to him and said, well, don't you have a friend or a relative that would like that seat? He said, no, they're all at the funeral. I know, it's pretty bad, but our society worships sports an awful lot. No doubt, too much. And when we think about the Super Bowl, we never think about things like love, do we? We think about who's going to crush the other person, and we think about who's going to dominate and who's got the plans that are going to mix up the other plans of the other person. Love doesn't really come into play, other than I suppose it's interesting to note that both the Harbaugh brothers, this is two Harbaugh, Jim and John are coaching, going against each other. I'm waiting to hear the interview with their mom. That's what I'm really waiting to hear. I haven't seen that yet, but I hope she gives a great interview because she's really got some diplomacy she's got to work here that we could probably use in the Middle East. But in any case, it's interesting that both the Harbaugh brothers, who, see if you don't really think about love. I mean, they are just sports guys. They like to win. But it's interesting, and this isn't just this past couple weeks, but throughout the course of this year, they both talked a lot about how much their team cares for each other. In fact, believe it or not, I even heard John mention faith, hope, and love in one of his locker room talks. And I thought, well, that was a number of weeks ago. It seemed to note that these players really care about each other. You know what? Maybe there is some application there. And I even heard last night by even Coach Crean after their victory last night, which was a great victory, while I was saying that his two brother-in-laws, which are the two Harbaugh brothers, that how much team comes above the individual, which is one of the great qualities of love and one of the great qualities, I think, of a great church. When we think about being salt and light, and you think about what really counts the most in life, it comes down to love. Love is the most important thing. God's love for us and our love for God and learning to love each other in that kind of a way. And Paul really lays this out in 1 Corinthians 13. Now, I can spend a lot of time on it, but we've talked before about how C.S. Lewis talked about the four loves, and Greek has four different words for love. Just briefly, you know, there's storge, which is the affectionate love where people are thrown together out of strange circumstances and find that they actually like each other. And then there's philos love, which is friendship love with Philadelphia, brotherly love. That's two Harbaugh brothers today, and we'll see played out. And then there's eros love, which is romantic love. And finally, there's agape love. And that's the kind of love that Jesus talks so much about. Very rarely was that word used prior to Christ. It was probably only found about 20 times in Greek literature. But then after Christ, then dramatically, it was really part of the Christian culture. And that love is a quality that the love really comes from the person who's loving the other person, not of a particular quality in the person that's loved. In other words, it's not because they're beautiful or wonderful. It's just sort of a grace that transforms and makes that relationship special. And that's the kind of love that Paul is talking about in 1 Corinthians 13 this morning. So when he says, first of all, what love is not, he said, if I speak in human or angelic tongues, but I have not love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And I have give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may not boast, but have not love, I gain nothing. Now think about that, because that list of things are things that most of us would think, well, that would make me number one or whatever it is. I mean, if I can move mountains and if I can give everything I have to the poor and if I can transform other people's lives. But Paul says, if you do it without love, it's just empty. It's just sort of manipulating people. But love comes from the heart, and love is something that our lives are transformed with. He goes on to say, what is love? And he gives this wonderful list. He said, love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of the wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And when you hear that sometimes, it's so poetic. You think, well, that's just a lot of great poetry. What about when the rubber hits the road? What about real life? You can't run a life that way. You can't maybe even run a business that way, for God's sake. I'm not even sure you can run a church that way, can you? But you know, the truth is that maybe you can. Maybe Paul really meant what he said. There's interesting. I sometimes like reading some of the business books that are out there. And one of the business people that I liked, Herb Kelleher, who is the founder of Southwest Air. Now, I'm not here to promote Southwest Air by any means today, but you know, Southwest Air, Herb Kelleher is sort of this colorful individual, a bit of a rogue, throughout his course in business, has pretty much transferred everything over. But he founded Southwest Air and decided to do everything differently. things that they did was the symbol, the ticker symbol on the stock exchange is LUV, which is love. And so they decided it wouldn't just be a mantra, but he wrote a book called Nuts, which if you know much about her, sort of fits in. But the idea is that Southwest only ever gave out nuts because they tried to save money, and that they became a legend because they saved so much money and save other people money. But in any case, he wrote a book called Nuts. In it, they actually go through 1 Corinthians 13 in sort of a loosely paraphrased manner and try to make it the mantra of their business. Now imagine that. It's not a church. In fact, and Herb Kelleher is just not really some kind of flamboyant evangelical Christian or anything, but they decided, look, what would happen if we actually did that? And so he goes and he says, you know, love is not a bunch of talk. Love's not a bunch of knowledge. Love takes action, doesn't fake it. And here's some of his paraphrase, if I could go through it. He says, love is patient. He says, you can't get more practical than that. This is what he says. The degree of patience we exercise with others reveals a lot about how much we care for them. Our ability to put up with the guff and inconveniences caused by others can be an indicator of how much we love them. Love is slow to anger when inconvenienced. When we get in the trenches with people to endure difficulty and hardship and we do it without complaining, we express our love for them. From a business person, if they're a successful one, actually probably the most successful airline, believe it or not, one of the safest and most profitable because maybe they love their employees and try to show some love to others. He goes on to say that love is kind and generous. And this is what he says about that. He says, kind people don't look away. They involve themselves and sometimes inconvenience themselves. And he goes on to talk about how that one time there was this, in Dallas, there was this TV show on, and it was doing a little documentary of a homeless shelter. They did interview one man who happened to be Ron Bruner. He seemed to be a rather intelligent person, down on his luck, lost his job. Because he lost his job, he lost his family and was just there at the shelter, really seemed to lose a lot of hope. And the vice president of human relations looked at that, and her name's Ann Rose at the time, and she said, well, gosh, I wonder if we could do something for him. And so she went down with another human resource person, and they talked to him at the shelter, meet him, and they decided they might be able to sort of adopt him and help him. They got him a job as a ticketing agent. Now, he had a hearing problem, which was part of his problem, and so they bought him a hearing aid, helped him with that, gave him enough money to get an apartment. They bought him a bicycle so that he could bicycle his way to work. That bicycle was stolen, and they promptly went out and got him another bicycle so he could make his way to work. That transformed his life, and he said that was the experience that really made all his life different. In fact, later on, he was reunited with his daughter, and that became a valuable relationship in his life. Now, that sounds like something the church should be doing. And you might think, well, gee, you know, love just doesn't apply to the business world, and yet maybe it does. Maybe if we were radical enough to live our lives, not just in church loving others, but whether it's in the school or the community or in business or in the farm, wherever it is, if we really lived out love, maybe our lives would be different. He goes on to say, love is courteous. And this, I'm quoting this businessman. He says, love helps us believe in people and look for goodness in others. And he goes on to talk about the golden rule or the law of reciprocity, which is simply that, you know, when you're nice to other people, that tends to bring out the best of them. Now, I know there's times when you're nice to other people and they're just not nice back. Well, don't let it ruin your day. It's just that, you know, too bad for them. I'm going to be nice anyway. I'm going to be twice as nice. And maybe that will just break the ice and break through and make a difference in their life. But the thing is, you know, to not let that drudgery of another person drag you down, you don't know what that other person is going through. They might have lost a loved one might be sick, and you're being nice may not seem to make any difference right then, but down the road, maybe that will make a difference. Maybe that'll just sort of thaw them and begin to lift their hearts. You never know as you go through life that doesn't touch people in certain ways. And he goes on to say, love is affirming. I heard someone say, I love souls, it's people I hate. Have you ever heard Christians, they love people, and then when it gets down in the trenches, it's like they just, everything they have to say about people is negative. Well, if you love souls, you're going to love people, not hate people. I mean, that should just sort of play itself out like that. He says, love believes, this is Herb Kelleher and I, love believes in people. It chooses to look for goodness in others. And he goes on to say, love makes people say, I believe in you. I value you. I want you to succeed and be fulfilled in everything you do. And
now I know, if you go to a fly on Southwest Air, it may not seem perfect or anything else, but it's kind of amazing that a person would write a book about the history of airline and use 1 Corinthians 13 as sort of the mantra. This is how we try to live out our day. We're not perfect, but this is what we do. And he goes on to say this, love is compassionate. And I quote, love draws us to get involved with the condition of other people's lives. When we develop a deep awareness of their suffering, compassion induces us to take some action. Compassion consists of the capability of identifying with the pain of another person, coupled with a desire to relieve it. It is the expression of love that causes so many Southwest employees to do such extraordinary things for each other and their customers. Now, I don't know if that's true, but you know, it's nice to live that out and say, you know, we can do this, whether it's in school or in church or in business. I like what Gandhi once said. He said, be the change you want to see in the world. It's so easy to pass on things and say, well, it's not practical. It's too idealistic. It doesn't really make the grade when the rubber meets the road. In fact, love does exactly that. Jesus did exactly that. You look at the life of Jesus, he always took time to listen to every person. And when lepers were outcasts, he reached out, he touched them, he healed them, and he cared for them. And when children were denied to come to him because he was too busy and maybe they weren't important enough, he said, wait a second. For such is the kingdom of God. And he took time and he talked to them and he blessed them. And our lives may not be perfect, but they can strive to reflect that kind of love and practicality in our life. And then finally, love extends grace and forgiveness. You might say in the workplace, grace and forgiveness. Good God. This is what he says. Grace is the capacity to accept people as they are and forgive them for the wrong they cause. As a component of love, grace is an act of the will, extended without condition or limitation. When we receive grace, it is always undeserved and usually unexpected. We come to it through no power of our own, but rather through the power of love extended from others. It has been said that too much of grace and forgiveness is in an organization will give the freedom to act irresponsibly. We don't think so. In fact, the authentic response that usually accompanies the gift of grace is one of gratitude and awe. People who feel an overwhelming sense of appreciation are compelled to act responsibly. What a beautiful thing to say for a business person in the world. There's a wonderful story of Clara Barton, who is the founder of the Red Cross. And early in her career, there was a person who just tried to destroy everything about her life. They did some malicious things. They said some unkind and untrue things about her. And one day later in life, that person came to Clara Barton and said, I've done all this sort of thing, and do you remember when I did this, and when I did this, and when I did that? And Clara Barton said, no. And she said, well, you know, what do you mean? I did this, and I did that, and I did this. And Clara Barton said, no, I distinctly remember forgetting it. What a beautiful act of grace. I distinctly remember forgetting it. Sometimes it takes an act of will, and you just got to say, you know what? I'm going to forget that. I'm going to be like Christ, and I'm going to put it behind me, and I'm just going to commit to that. Today, I challenge all of us to not make love something idealistic or something that's just for Jesus. Love is for us. Jesus gave his grace to us that our lives could be forgiven and transformed, and we could touch other people's lives. And if we're really salt and light in the world today, then we can touch people in a practical, everyday way. That even 1 Corinthians 13, it seems so poetic and idealistic. It's really something that's true and really is where the rubber meets the road and a practical part of life. And Jesus wanted that. Jesus was affirming and he was full of grace and he touched people's lives from children to lepers to orphans and widows and people that were normally discarded by society. And his love transformed them and made them important. Mother Teresa said this. She said, do small things with great love. I'd like to close with this illustration. It's really one of my favorite stories. It's a true story. It's really not love that's dramatic in a sense. It's love that's rather commonplace. In fact, it's love that's sort of everyday, but can make a great difference if we take the little things in life to be important. As she stood in front of her fifth grade class on the first day of school, she told the children an untruth. Like most teachers, Miss Thompson looked at her student and said that she loved them all the same. That really was impossible because there in the front row, slumped in his seat, was a little boy named Teddy Stoddard. Miss Thompson had watched Teddy the year before and noticed that he did not play well with other children, that his clothes were messy, and that he constantly needed a bath. In addition, Teddy was unpleasant sometimes. It got to the point where Miss Thompson would actually take delight in marking his papers with a broad red pen, making bold X's and putting a big F at the top of his papers. At school where Miss Thompson taught, she was required to review each child's past records, and she put Teddy's off until last. However, when she reviewed his file, she was in for a big surprise. Teddy's first grade teacher wrote, "Teddy is a bright child with a ready laugh. He does his work neatly and has good manners. He's a joy to be around." His second grade teacher wrote, "Teddy is an excellent student, well-liked by his classmates, but he's troubled because his mother has terminal illness and life at home must be a struggle." His third grade teacher wrote, "His mother's death has been hard on him. He tries to do his best, but his father doesn't show much interest, and his home life will soon affect him if steps aren't taken." Teddy's fourth grade teacher wrote, "Teddy is withdrawn and doesn't show much interest in school. He doesn't have many friends and sometimes sleeps in class." Well, by now, Miss Thompson realized the problem, and she was ashamed of herself. She felt even worse when her students brought her Christmas presents wrapped in beautiful ribbons and brought bright paper, except for Teddy's. His present was clumsily wrapped in heavy brown paper and apparently gotten from a grocery bag. Miss Thompson, however, took pains to open it in the middle of the other presents. Some of the children started to laugh when she found a rhinestone bracelet with some of the stones missing and a bottle of 1/4 perfume. But she stifled the children's laughter when she explained how pretty the bracelet was and put it on and dabbed some of the perfume on her wrist. Teddy Stoddard stayed after school that day just long enough to say, "Miss Thompson, today you smell just like my mother used to." After the children left, she cried. And on that very day, she quit teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic. Instead, she began to teach children. Miss Thompson paid particular attention to Teddy. As she worked with him, his mind seemed to come alive. The more she encouraged him, the faster he responded. By the end of the year, Teddy had become one of the smartest children in the class. And despite her lie that she would love all the children the same, Teddy became one of her pets. A year later, she found a note on her door from Teddy telling her that she was the best teacher he'd ever had. 6 years went by before she got another note from Teddy, and he wrote that he'd finished high school third in his class, and she was still the best teacher he'd ever had. 4 years after that, she got another letter saying that while things had been tough at school sometimes, he'd stayed in school. He'd stuck it out and would soon graduate from college with highest honors. He assured Miss Thompson that she was still his best and favorite teacher. 4 more years passed, and another letter came. This time, he explained that after he got his bachelor's degree, he decided to go further. The letter explained that she was still the best teacher he'd ever had. But now his name was a little longer. Theodore F. Stoddard, M.D. The story doesn't end there. You see, there was another letter later that spring. Teddy said he'd met his girl and was going to get married. He explained that his father had died a couple years ago, and he was wondering if Mrs. Thompson might agree to sit at the wedding, the place reserved for the mother of the groom. Of course, Miss Thompson did, and guess what? She wore the bracelet and put some perfume on, just like he gave her. At the wedding, they hugged each other, and Dr. Stoddard whispered in Miss Thompson's ear, "Thank you for believing in me. Thank you for making me feel important and showing me I could make a difference." Well, Miss Thompson whispered back and said, "No, you have it all wrong. You were the one who taught me that I could make a difference. I didn't know how to teach until I met you." Teddy Stoddard, Dr. Stoddard, is head of the Stoddard Cancer Wing, Des Moines Methodist Hospital in Des Moines, Iowa. What a beautiful story that we can make a difference in our everyday world by the little things we do if we really believe in that. For all eternity, these three will always remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love.
Jesus said, a new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this will all people know you are my disciples, if you love one another. Let us join in prayer. Gracious God, on a day when we celebrate who will win the Super Bowl, help us remember that the greatest game in life is a game that matters for all eternity. And the greatest quality that we can have is the one that you use to transform our lives, love. Help us to accept your grace and forgiveness and love. And help us to let your love transform our lives, that we could be new people, and that our love can touch other people's lives and show them their love. Through your love, help us to be lights in our world, we pray in your precious name. Amen.